Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. My guest today is Joe Wilner. He's a transformation coach and a licensed master level psychologist. He has a master's in counseling and a master's in liberal arts. Joe creates customized coaching programs that allow participants to live from their purpose, where they're thriving on all levels, mentally, physically, and spiritually. He's also the creator of a personal development blog called Shake Off the Grind, which provides training and products on personal and professional development, well-being, stress reduction, and mindfulness. Joe, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, first of all, it's been a privilege for me to write for Shake Off the Grind, your blog. So tell us what got you motivated to do a personal development blog.
Well, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I was just really starting to focus on bettering myself, kind of in flux in my life, just unsure who I was, where I was headed. And so I started to do a lot of research and get into personal development and positive psychology and those sort of things, and just kind of started writing. And the blog was initially focused on more, you know, career related things and finding passions, but it transitioned into an amalgamation of a lot of different things when it comes for, you know, well-being and mindfulness and emotional health and you know, achievement and all those sort of things as well. But but from that point on, it's just been kind of a great platform to build a coaching practice and to just kind of offer, you know, my insights and learning that I go through to other people. So it's been a great journey over the last few years.
Mm. What was your goal with the site, Joe?
Well, initially it was to just kind of express myself and to have an outlet to kind of share what I'm learning about in my personal life. So really no model necessarily with it. Initially it was just kind of to write and to kind of share my ideas and everything, but it's been a great way to kind of grow my passion for writing, and it's turned into something that's a little more sustainable. So it's been an exciting thing, and I think the platform idea is something for everyone to consider having, you know, a website, whether it's just almost kind of a business card for people, or somewhere where you can actually share your ideas and, you know, services that you have. But it's sort of kind of a mixture of all those things for me right now.
Mm. Yeah, and it's really taken off. That's really cool. You talk about wanting to help people find their calling and follow their passion, and I love that. I mean, I wrote about that in my own book. What are some first steps in moving people toward that goal?
Well, I think the first step with almost really any type of, whether I'm trying to make a change in life or I'm trying to discover where I'm headed, it's really all about the self-awareness piece first. And so, you know, all the famous notions of know thyself and really gaining understanding of who I am as a person is going to be a first step for that. So that could include recognizing my values at the time, what's most important to me, what is, you know, the top of my list, things that I want to keep in mind when I'm exploring those things. So it's sort of an idea of developing my lifestyle first and then figuring out where, you know, where I want to go forward and pursue things as more of a calling or a living. But that would also be, you know, creating sort of a mission and vision statement for my life. So being willing to dream is something that I think we lose and we forget about as we go through life. I think we fall into patterns and we fall into some kind of career, and we sort of let go of these dreams that we have. We can have dreams in all areas of life, but if I have a certain dream for what I want to do and the person I want to become, I'm allowing myself to do that again and really, really building up that vision of what my life could be like. And so I think cultivating my values, understanding what those are, what's most important to me, starting to create a vision, allowing myself to dream and just explore the possibilities, and really asking myself what possibilities are out there that I'm maybe not considering. And for a third thing, I think people might just want to consider just the type of lifestyle that they do want to live, and make sure that they're not being solely driven by career-related things, just keeping in mind the bigger picture of things as well.
Yeah. You think people are satisfied with their lives?
That is a good question. It's a tricky one, too, because when it comes to personal development or trying to better ourselves, we can fall into a trap, I think, of not being satisfied ever. So,
yeah. Well, we live in a society that kind of promotes that. You know, contentment isn't something that we all buy into too easily, and especially in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, and in the Kansas City area where I'm from, I don't know if you've heard of Johnson County, for instance, but it's a very affluent area in Kansas. And so you have a lot of people, you know, probably trying to keep up with the Joneses, quote-unquote, as that saying goes, comparing themselves to others, trying to reach a lifestyle that's comparable to other people in their life. And I think when we do those sort of things, we certainly aren't going to be satisfied, or we're likely to maybe take things for granted, not be as grateful for what we do have. But research, positive psychology research, shows that wealth does not correlate to happiness, at least to a certain extent. If I have my needs met and I'm not living in poverty, basically I think it's about $50,000 up to about $500,000, there's not a significant difference in well-being of people. And so I think satisfaction is something that can be subjective, but I think there's certain areas too where being satisfied is pretty important. So with becoming a better person, with growing as a person, trying to become the best version of myself, I think we can learn to always strive for more there, because I think we can all work towards our potential. But things like relationships and those sort of things, I think learning how to be satisfied with other people's imperfections is going to be a pretty important thing there.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, some of these things in terms of our own self-growth, those are going to be the eternal things, the things we take with us. And those are the things that are really important, because you've got millions of people that have a lot of money and they're still not really happy.
Sure.
I think, you know, one thing people need to develop a plan for self-growth is to look at what you said about core values, because that's going to include their legacy, you know, and that's going to key them into what's important to them, their core values, and what kind of legacy they want to leave.
Yeah, and it does all start with us. You mentioned the internal work that we can do, and changing from the inside out is really where satisfaction is going to come from. Because if I'm satisfied with myself and I'm content with the person I am, if I know I'm being at my best, it's a lot easier to go through my day-to-day life feeling proud of myself, feeling integrity and those sort of things. Even if I'm not exactly where I want to be, I can work towards my aspirations and dreams from a place of contentment in that way.
Yeah. And so that takes us into a motivation piece. You know, a lot of people want to change, but few people seem to be able to sustain those changes that they start to make. A perfect example is losing weight or making New Year's resolutions, for example. You know, we're all gung-ho at first, and then in a few weeks, you know, we're shot. So how do we help people get motivated and keep that motivation going?
Well, sure. There's two things that come to mind for me with that. And one of those is self-trust, and another one of those is self-worth. And I think those two pieces, they're both equally important. One of those may be more difficult for people than others, and both of them may be difficult at certain times for people. But when I'm trying to make a change, or I'm trying to, you know, whatever it is, if it's change a bad habit or reach a certain goal I have or change something about my life, just transitioning in some way, I have to believe that I can do it, first off. And so that self-trust piece of knowing I have what it takes to make this happen is one component. And then the other side of that is self-worth and believing that I actually deserve to have this change or this happiness or this positive result in my life. And so you run into people where we have some blind spots. We might have some ways that we kind of sabotage ourselves, because if I'm trying to make some change or transition, if I don't believe I really can, I'm probably at some point or another going to make a decision or make a choice that is kind of inhibiting me from actually making the next step. I'm probably going to get stuck along the way.
Sure.
And if I don't believe that I deserve that, I am going to do something to kind of sabotage. So you might run into someone who, the weight loss thing, for instance, they might run into both of those. They're on a diet, they're trying to exercise, but somewhere along the line, they just don't. It's sort of like an internal self-worth where they say, I really don't love myself, I'm really not a good person, and so they eventually go back to their old habits, and they can't sustain that change.
Yeah, it's those core beliefs that they have about themselves, and then the negative self-talk sabotages them. Yeah, with, oh, I'm worthless, I'm not good enough, I don't deserve this, I can't do it.
And that's really what it all comes down to is we all have these, you know, limiting core beliefs from, you know, some point in our life. Unfortunately, none of us had perfect parents, and none of us had perfect teachers, and society is far from perfect in the media. So we all have limiting core beliefs that we've picked up, and those are going to be a part of, you know, I think we're all going to have that, those automatic negative thoughts that pop into our head as we go forward. And so learning to identify those and learning to kind of be compassionate with ourselves, I think, is one big thing, because it's easy to buy into these thoughts. And even if we catch ourselves thinking negatively, then we go down the rabbit hole of, oh, I'm a bad person, I just can't stop thinking negatively, right? So being compassionate with ourselves is one thing, and not being so critical of ourselves as we go through this process. But we do have to learn to identify those negative thoughts, those limiting thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I see as a counselor, you know, because how about the person that says, well, that all sounds great for you, Joe, and for you, Rita, but you don't understand the limitations I'm facing. So what do you see as the top self-imposed limitations people are dealing with? And how do you help them overcome the obstacles and brainstorm possibilities for change?
Well, first, I'm going to jump back to that previous notion you said of where people might say, well, it's easy for this person to say, who, you know, seems to be in such a good place, or, you know, whatever it might be. I think every single person struggles with these on their own level, with their own insecurities, their own uncertainties about who they are as a person. I almost believe that I would say it's a human experience.
Yes.
That we doubt ourselves to some extent. And so, so I think it's normal. And if in normalizing it, I believe it makes it easier to accept it and then begin to do something about it and make that a part of our practice of self-growth, without it being something that has a negative connotation. It's just a part of the human experience, and we either are going to let that part of us be in the driver's seat, or we're going to kind of take control and be more mindful of that.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it is part of the experience, but it's not the whole pie. You know, I kind of give people this example of a pie, and if you slice up the pie, well, that might be a part of your experience or what you believe, but are there other things that are good and positive, and how can we work from there? So normalizing it is what you're saying, that everybody faces this. It's not just you. You're not out there by yourself. You have a great quote on the site that I like by J.C. Watts. We can be marked from the past, or we can make a mark on the future. And I think this is so critical for people, because so many of us get stuck by our past failures. You know, we develop those core beliefs that we're not good enough or that we're failures. Are there any specific techniques as a coach that you use to help people out of that?
Well, I do think that quote's important, because one of the things that does lead people to get stuck for certain people is we get, without forgiveness and those sort of things, we can let our past impact us in the present, and it can lead us to get stuck if we're not willing to work through those things. And I think often forgiveness is a big one for that, because we do have to acknowledge our past, and our past does affect us as the person we are today to some extent. But learning not to let the past identify us can be a very, very important thing. I think when you mentioned failures, you know, if I have enough failures in my life, if I'm, whatever my intentions are, if I keep, you know, pushing forward, but I keep failing, I keep having setbacks, I keep running into obstacles, I just can't seem to get a win, it can be easy to start to identify myself with those failures.
And yes.
So if I have enough of them, that becomes kind of who I am, and that's my, that becomes my story. And so recognizing that, you know, despite what I've gone through in the past, yeah, it's affected me, but I get to choose the kind of person that I want to be. I'm always a co-creator of my life. And this is a hard notion to recognize and to fully accept. It's really the difference between that victim mentality and that accountability mentality of, I am a co-creator of my life. No matter what I've been through, no matter what situation I'm in currently, I always have a choice in how I respond to this and the direction I go with this and how I use this situation. So learning to learn from failures, find value in things that I've been through, find some sort of meaning in what I've been through in a way that allows me to heal from that, and also to try to move forward from that and recognize that that doesn't have to define me, the things that I've been through.
So basically what we're asking people to do is take a risk. Again, step out, you know, so you've had these failures. How can you learn from them? How can you grow? Because the thing about failures, I mean, we all want to hit the delete button on the bad places in our life and our failures.
Sure.
But if we're honest with ourselves, aren't those the places that we've learned the most and grown the most? I mean, we don't grow on the mountaintops.
I totally agree. And, you know, it makes sense that we want to get rid of these failures, because it's the failures that really are the things that crush our self-worth. The failures are the things that feel shame and to feel guilt and to feel like we're not a good person. And so we try to just kind of brush those aside. We try to just blind ourselves from those and pretend they never happened. But like you're saying, they can become something to find opportunity if we're willing to do that. And it's tricky, because I think there are certain things, I guess what I'm trying to refer to are more of a daily experiences, mistakes we've made, probably not the big traumatic catastrophes. I think there are certain things that are at a deeper level that are more difficult to deal with, but more of the daily mistakes, the bad decision making we've done, you know, the things that really we can learn from ourselves to become a better person. Those are the things that that we can grow from, that we can take away from and realize that I've been down that road before. What do I want to take away from that? So that's a big question I ask people, as opposed to focusing on, you know, why is this happening to me? Why now? You know, why can't I catch a break? It's more like, what can I do with this situation that I'm experiencing or that I've been through? What can I do with it?
Yeah. Yeah. How can I make it better? How can I grow from it? And I guess it goes back to what lens am I looking through, you know, when I face adversity? I mean, I can look through, I mean, some people kind of see the glass half empty all the time, and other people see the glass half full. You know, they're more possibility thinkers. So maybe some of it has to do with, you know, how we're wired and how life experiences has kind of pulled the trigger on, you know, the things that have happened to us to reinforce those things. But I think we, the cool thing, and you just said it, was we have a choice about which lens we're going to look through. We can choose about that. There's a lot of things we can't choose about in life, but we can choose about that. And that's powerful if we can harness that.
It's such a tricky thing for people, because the deeper I get into that, the why me kind of stuck in the mud mentality, the victim mentality, the deeper I get into that, the more I'm going to resist the idea that I actually do have a choice and a decision to better my life. Because the deeper I get into that, I start to identify with that victim. And so it takes a while sometimes for people to break out of that.
Sure.
But once they do, it is such a big paradigm shift. It's really an amazing thing when people make that shift from victim to owner.
Well, do you think there's a payoff for people to get stuck in a victim mentality? I mean, it keeps them stuck. Maybe it's a way they protect themselves, you know, to not, not see any more failure. Because if I don't do anything, you know, then I avoid, you know, the risks. I avoid more failure.
I mean, I think to make. I think the being stuck is a. It can be comforting if I've been stuck a long enough time. That probably feels pretty natural.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's people probably in the world who identify with having to have problems and drama in their life, and when things are going well, they just don't know how to handle it, and so they somehow create some kind of difficulties for themselves. And I think maybe it could give people an excuse mm-hmm. to not have to fail, because if I stay stuck, I don't have to try. So I could see where that could be some kind of adaptive thing for them. So I would say mm-hmm. the victim mentality maybe isn't necessarily beneficial, but it's an adaptive part of our personality.
Right, and then we feel safe there because we don't have to step out and risk.
But that's not our real self.
Exactly.
And by real self, I mean it's not the self that's going to help us understand our purpose and our potential and live full and meaningful life. That's not where we're going to be able to do that. We have to break out of that victim mentality.
What goes into loving and valuing ourselves?
That is a very important thing to make in any sort of change in life, and that is that inside-out change. And I think a couple things go into that. One thing that I would tell somebody if they are struggling with loving and valuing themselves, it doesn't maybe seem like the typical thing to do, but it wouldn't be about necessarily changing their, it could be about changing their thoughts, but it would be more about being very intentional in what they're doing on a day-to-day basis and trying to live with more balance. And particularly in four areas, one of those would be mental or intellectual, one would be emotional, physical, and then the last one would be spiritual. And where this idea comes from basically is a lot of different authors who discuss this idea that we're a whole person.
Body, soul, and spirit.
Exactly. And we have to tend to all of those and nurture and nourish all of those to feel whole, to feel at our best. And a lot of times what happens is we unintentionally let ourselves go. We neglect ourselves for so many different reasons. And we kind of start to maybe give to other people more. And this isn't a bad thing, but, you know, someone like a mother who, for instance, who is always taking care of other people, but then neglects to take care of herself, we can start to kind of lose track of those things, and we start to not take care of ourselves. And so where I'm going with this is if people are willing to take even 10 to 15 minutes every day to nourish each of those quadrants, what can happen is we start to feel more whole, we start to feel better because we are taking time to nourish these crucial aspects of ourself. And by doing that, we're going to start to feel better, we're going to feel more confident, we're going to, they almost can be considered, not basic needs, but some sort of, they're needs that we have, but just obviously not survival needs, but they're needs. And if we fulfill those needs, we are going to be at our best and be better in our day-to-day life. And we're going to start feeling better about ourselves when we're at our best.
So what you're saying is all of this affects our well-being, you know, on a physical level, because we all know stress can kill, you know, all of that stuff.
Sure.
So we've got to be noticing. So that's where the mindfulness stuff comes in, you know, teaching our clients to, you know, be mindful of their physical bodies, you know, when they're stressed, and we don't want them to do it when they're ready to blow. We want them to be learning to nurture that part of themselves, you know, as they go along. And then spending time, you know, spiritually, spending time emotionally, paying attention to their hearts, what's going on in their hearts, all those kinds of things then is what you're saying.
Totally. And the reason that I say all of those are important, because if you think about how all of them interact with each other, maybe it's more of just the physical side of things. I'm very unhealthy. I'm not taking care of myself. I'm not getting enough sleep. I'm not eating well. If I'm neglecting that area, that will trickle over into my emotional and my intellectual and my spiritual side of things.
Absolutely.
And same with the other areas. If I'm highly stressed, like you said, it takes a toll on my body, on my immune system. Spiritually, I'm going to be void of probably, you know, feeling the sense of meaning and connection that I have to a higher power and those sort of things. So they're all important in that regard, that that if I neglect one, it can have a negative impact on the others.
Yeah, it's kind of like the self-talk piece we were talking about, that if you constantly beat yourself up, like I work with a lot of eating disorder clients, and they really struggle with beating themselves up. So the effect of that, you know, week after week, month after month, year after year, that's got to affect, you know, their emotional health as well as their physical health. I mean, they're obviously, you know, starving themselves and binging and purging and all that, but just the whole self-talk piece has a real huge effect on people, and they have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, it totally does. And you know, it's as the deeper we get into that negative spiral of things not going well, it seems like it's harder to get back out of that. And so that's kind of the trick, is just saying, what's one small thing I can do today to nourish this area of my life? And so it doesn't have to take a long time, because I know it can sound overwhelming for someone who's busy to say, how am I supposed to, you know, exercise for 30 minutes and, you know, meditate for 30 minutes and do all these different things. But it's more just very small things, like, you know, something that takes 5 or 10 minutes to start with.
What kind of helps can people find on Shake Off the Grind?
I have this fall, I have an e-course coming out called Becoming Unstoppable, and it's 12 principles I put together to help people overcome obstacles and achieve the goals that they have in life. And so really I've been very, very focused in that area of kind of bouncing back from difficulties, kind of working through setbacks, becoming resilient.
Awesome.
And so a lot of the content right now that you'll find on there is going to be stuff related to those sort of ideas, just kind of working through adversity in life.
Great. Can you give us an address for the blog?
Yeah, sure. It's www.shakeoffthegrind.com. And you can also visit joewilner.com as well, just for more general information about more of my overall services and everything that I do on a daily basis.
Perfect. Joe, we're out of time today, but thank you so much for being our guest. It was awesome.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.